Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome visual artist Jackson. Jackson, welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here, man.
Dude, we're excited for you to come down. I know that Seth's been looking particularly forward to having down here, and I checked out a bunch of your art, and I'm stoked to be able to talk to you, too. So thank you for taking the time.
Of course, man. No problem.
So I want to kind of start at the start a little bit. That's kind of our thing here. So can you rewind me to the point in your life when art starts to be really impactful for you?
Yeah, definitely. So it was around high school time when I was around 18. I was actually kind of experimenting a lot with like psychedelic medicine. And I call it medicine now because I've come to a point in my life where it is as such.
Right.
At first, it was something I was curious about, something that I heard could just help with realizing what you want, realizing what you want to do and what's important. So like I said, I was experimenting with these things, and at first it was just experiencing what they could do. You know, oh, like I see pretty colors, or I feel a certain way that's interesting.
Right.
But then I realized what I'm doing and what I'm taking is something that's trying to show me things. It's trying to teach me. It's trying to push me in a certain direction that's more in flow with my environment and myself.
Mm-hmm.
So believe it or not, at first it made me uneasy because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I felt this void that needed to be filled. So I literally put pen to paper to feel a sense of therapy.
You know
what I mean? And it was scribbling. It's very different from what I do now, obviously.
Yeah.
But I felt this sense of flow and the sense of like serenity that I didn't necessarily want to let go of. So I kept doing it and I held on to it. And then slowly enough, this certain style had developed from me literally just basically meditating, you know, entering this flow state, putting pen to paper and just letting myself go. And that's kind of why I got into art, because how much my life has changed simply from putting pen to paper, you
right.
know, figuratively and literally, it's changed for the better. It's made me more okay with myself. It's made me more okay with the environment around me, and it's made me realize more and learn more. So,
well, did you have inspiration before that to do any type of visual art, or was really just to the point where it was like pen to paper just somehow made like some esoteric sense and you just did it?
I mean, art was always cool to me. I enjoyed music. I could appreciate a piece of art and look at it and go, wow, this is beautiful and I like this. But, you know, I doodled as a kid. But to be real with you, there was really no sense of invigorating love for art before that. It was kind of this spontaneous need to create that I dove straight into and kind of like turned over a new leaf and decided that this was something that I'm going to do and that I'm going to change my lifestyle. I'm going to be less, you know, reserved and less clean cut. I'm going to be more expressive and be more emotional and be more accepting of this part of me.
And the inspiration for that, you think, was the freedom or release you felt from putting the pen to the paper?
Most definitely. Most definitely. And just to have a space where I could express myself freely without the worry of judgment from other people. And, you know, because, I mean, it's hard enough to not even judge yourself.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's hard enough to put, like, to create anything or try anything and go, oh, this sucks, or this isn't the way I wanted it to be, or it should be this way, or it should look this way because of X, Y, or Z. So I think, personally, like, I'm blessed to be able to even do that and be accepting of myself, because I think, like I said, that's hard enough already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people will shoot all over themselves.
No, I exactly. call that. And like, it's not that I don't. Sometimes I do.
I think
it's a normal thing. Like, we all critique ourselves. But I think, like, it's important to also have that space for, you know, we're not perfect. We don't know everything immediately. It takes time to grow.
You know,
buildings, temples are built brick by brick. You know what I mean? And the intention that goes into laying each seemingly insignificant and small brick is just as important as the entire completed structure, you know.
Facts. So when you very first started painting, or started, what was your medium? It was just pen to paper
drawing.
To begin with?
Black and white drawings. You know, my roots are in drawing.
Okay.
And I've recently started painting more. I've recently started spray painting in the past year and a half to 2 years, just because it's something that I found a lot of inspiration in.
Mm-hmm.
And I love spray paint. I love the ability to create so much so fast with it, because the trade-off with spray paint that I found personally is that it's hard to control. But once you do learn to control it, you can kind of make a lot happen in a little amount of time. And right. I've gotten a lot of inspiration from live artists that do spray painting at music festivals and shows like that, because I've always like had the desire since I started doing art to put myself in lively spaces like that and create, to be around people, because I kind of sometimes have this introverted, extroverted sense of self mm-hmm. that loves to be in a large crowd while simultaneously like participating in my own introverted activity, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So when you're doing your early pieces where you're just drawing, mm-hmm. what's that subject matter? What came to you? What started being like important for you to get out?
So I kind of grew up with a semi-religious background. My parents were Catholic, but they weren't ever strictly Catholic. They weren't ever enforcing it upon me. But, you know, I was going to church with them now and then. You know, my mom would pray. Mm-hmm. So this sense of wanting to connect to something greater. So I had a lot of curiosity through different religions and cultures that had different religions throughout history. So, you know, I would look towards like Buddhist stories, Hindu stories, you know, maybe old Native American stories, because the creativity that comes from groups of people when they're trying to connect with a god or something that is beyond human inspired me. So that's what I wanted to start to create with. And, you know, Jack's son, which is like a spinoff of my name, which is Jackson,
right,
is kind of the reason I really enjoy drawing suns. And that's when I started doing it, because it was so natural, kind of like the Buddhist mandala. It's a circle and it almost draws itself and it builds itself. Mm-hmm. And it was that appreciation for that natural imagery that can kind of flow out of me and that can come from outside influences that I was like looking towards, because when you're starting art, it's kind of hard to like know what to draw.
Right.
It's almost harder to figure out what you want to do than it is to actually do the thing that you're trying to create. So it was, I definitely have a reverence for the sun in general and just different solar symbology just throughout cultures and like past beliefs and stuff like that.
And how much did the transition of your experience with psychedelics connect you to those things? Was that something you were like always aware of somewhat inherently because of the somewhat exposure you had to religion, and then that opened the door? Or was this just like a whole new thing that you felt that gravitas towards?
It was something that was subconsciously there that I made the realization through when taking psychedelic medicine, because I wasn't aware of it, but in taking these medicines, I was able to go within myself and realize, okay, this is a part of me,
right,
that is trying to crawl out, that needs to express itself somehow. So I guess like the answer is yes to both of those questions, because I think without my upbringing and the environment I was in, and also without, you know, experiencing healing in medicine, I don't think either or would have happened without them together kind of inspiring me.
Right. So you take that inspiration and you're able to have some interesting and motivating subject matter for your first bunch of drawings and the first bit of art that you're letting out. Where's your life at that point? Are you thinking to yourself, as soon as you start doing this, man, I'm diving headfirst into being an artist?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard at first because, you know, the idea of being an artist is definitely, it's tricky.
Right.
Because, you know, like I'm only 21, so I'm still figuring out that as choosing art as a path, you have to be extremely multifaceted, you know, because I started drawing. I don't just draw now. Now I draw, I paint, I do commissions, I do tattoos. I'll help people design album covers. I'll make merchandise. I'll make shirts, because it's completely freelance work to some degree. You're not really tying yourself to money and resources that have been established for a long period of time. You're saying, I'm taking a sense of self, and I'm trying to basically live with it.
Right.
And my intention isn't, you know, I need to make money, but my intention isn't necessarily, oh, this is going to make me rich, because I strongly believe that I have a sense of richness that values life and relationships and happiness more than just getting money. And I, like I said, I realized, but that money is necessary to have to be able to do things because of the world that we live in.
Right.
But
which carriage goes in front of which horse?
Exactly. 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 But, you know, like you asked, yes, I did want to dive in, but I was terrified. I still am scared.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? There's some days I'm super confident. I'm on my high horse and I'm like, I'm doing great. This is the best day ever. And then sometimes I fall off that horse and it feels like I roll down to the deepest of the depths that you can go to. And I'm like, wow. Like, you know, I think, is art even helpful? Has it really helped anyone besides me? Is it self-serving? Because, you know, I have this desire to inspire others, this desire to create art that makes people understand unity, that makes people understand soul, that makes people understand the importance of creativity. And sometimes I feel like I'm not doing that at all.
Well, even if you're doing it for yourself.
Exactly.
That's the devil's advocate to it all. Mm. Maybe I need to do it just for me.
Definitely, right. Mm-hmm. 'Cause sometimes there's also that duality of to serve others is to serve the self, but sometimes to serve the self is also to serve others, because if you can act as a beacon of inspiration for other people to be who they really want to be, even if you're just helping yourself, you may not be aware of it, but you're actually helping tons of people. And, you know, I can see that personally from artists and musicians and people that I've looked up to and I've been able to see, and I'm like, wow, you're just doing you. And that's a beautiful thing. And that makes me more okay with being myself, which you might not even know me. I might not ever meet this person, but they've helped me in ways that they won't even ever be aware of.
What do you think is the big challenge for people when it comes to being yourself, as it were, for no other way to put it, and then going from there? If being yourself is the oxygen mask you got to put on first before you help everybody else, mm-hmm. What do you think is some of the things that hooks people up from doing that, or what some of the things that help you do that?
You know, I'm glad that my family, sometimes they don't understand the path that I've taken, but they accept it and they choose to, you know, love and support me. I've surrounded myself with friends who support me, and, you know, it's really good. Like, no one can do anything alone.
Right.
I don't do anything alone. I have friends that are producers. I know creative directors. I have family members that sometimes will hold me up when I need them to.
Nice.
Because realistically, you know, I'm an independent artist and I put up this image like I'm doing this. This is me. This is who I am. But there's countless interactions that I've had with people that have helped me put on like that mask, as you say, to be myself. And I think you asked, like, what are some of the things that might hold people back from doing that? You know,
yeah.
I think there's countless things, but I think maybe for me personally, it's looking back on norms and ways of life that I guess my mother and father and then their parents and the generations before that just go into your ancestors that have had to get used to and have had to live and that have to live with just so that they can survive.
Right.
And I think what makes us special as humans, this makes us different than just from just being an animal, is that we can have conversations like this and we can have these realizations of, yes, I need to survive because I am a living, breathing human, but we can talk about love. We can talk about creativity. We can talk about inspiration. We can uplift each other. And I think, you know, if we want to look into the future and think, how are we going to evolve? Because I think an important part of our evolution is making people realize that they can be themselves, that no matter if they want to be a cook, a bus driver, a politician, they're innately creating something with their existence that has the potential to uplift themselves and other people, and that the value needs to be seen in all of that, because everyone, you know, we are one people, we are one soul,
right?
We are one being. And with that knowledge and with that awareness, we can appreciate life more, but we appreciate each other more.
Right, and that's really the value that's maybe gotten a little bit sidestepped.
For sure, for sure.
So you mentioned a good word in there, survival. You got to survive.
Yeah.
So you start making these drawings, and you're starting to branch out a little bit. At what point are you doing this to survive? When's the first time you start putting yourself out there as this is going to be my career?
I mean, let's see, I was like 20 or something like that, bartending. And I was like, I'd sold a few original pieces here and there, but
that were drawings.
Yeah. That were drawings, but you know, still not enough as frequently to like make it like a living.
Mm-hmm.
And making it a living is still something I'm working on, because sometimes I have times where there's a lot of work and sometimes there's times where there's not a lot of work. So it's putting myself in a certain, you know, area to make money for the time being so I can survive. But I think the first time I did do it, like I said, I was around like 19, 20. I was just like, no, I was like 18. I was younger. I was like, I'm just going to make some shirts. I'm going to see what's good with that. I'm going to put a lot of money into making a large amount so I can actually make some return on them.
Mm.
And it was a weird feeling because I was like, art needs to be art. It doesn't need to be these like mechanically reproduced things. Like
that old chestnut.
Exactly. But I was like, no. I was like, this is important, and it makes my art more accessible to people that might like it. And
exactly.
Doing that, I realized I was like, wow, more people appreciate my art than I thought. And not everyone has the ability to commission you to do something.
True.
Some people want to just wear your art or have a print or have a knickknack, you know, or a lighter or a coaster and say, now I have this piece of art from an artist that I really respect and that I really love. And now I feel more connected with them. And I think that kind of really opened my eyes to being able to, you know, survive as an artist, that artists don't necessarily just have to sell art. And art can be anything. And it's not just a canvas. It's not just a drawing, you know.
That's one of the points where a lot of artists will get what I call precious about their stuff. It hard for you to get over the thought of preciousness, or that just hit you that strongly? You were like, no way, I have to do this and be more broad.
At first, yeah, there was that sense of preciousness because, you know, I did start art as kind of almost like a meditation. It's something to help heal myself.
Right.
So I was kind of, I don't even know the word, maybe spiritually pretentious is the word about it. I was like, no, this is something that needs to be sacred. It doesn't need to be sold. It doesn't need to be this. But I, you know, that's a very elevated idea. And like, not everyone's there. We're, you know, we're human. We sell things. We trade things. We buy things. We give each other things.
We ultimately inspire one another.
Exactly. Ultimately inspire one another. So it's like, there's this... I think Nietzsche wrote the book that Thus Spoke Zarathustra. I think about him because he's this sage that would sit in a cave and he would meditate for months at a time and make all these realizations about the universe. But whenever he would go down to humanity, he would try to communicate them and people would laugh at him. You know what I mean? People would say, like, what are you saying? You're crazy. So it's kind of that realization of what's good if – like what good is it if I – am comfortable and I realize the importance of something if I can't share it with everyone else.
Right.
You know.
Where do you think that feeling comes from? Because some people do like to have that feeling and kind of almost like, you know, there is like a gatekeeping to spirituality and artistic manifestations and things. You know, how do you feel differently, I guess?
This is a big guess because I can't speak for people that have chosen that path
right.
to kind of be very particular.
And, yeah, that's a good word
for
it. Yeah,
and gatekeepy about their spirituality is, I think if we go back not even too far in history, maybe just like 100 years, like maybe even less, people were persecuted for these kind of things.
Right.
So I think people developed schools and groups of thought and spirituality that they hid. Because they didn't want to be persecuted, whether that was social persecution or literally getting executed.
Right.
And those are intense things. So I think, like, it's hard. I don't think any group I don't think any spiritual group is going to wake up one day and go, okay, I can just release all the trauma that I've tied myself to because now I'm this type of religion or this type of spirituality. You know, that's gonna take lots of time of human awareness and acceptance of different groups of people who have thought differently, who are still very similar, but have decided that, you know, throughout history, that their way is the right way. And we have to pass these teachings down through writing and pass them down through oral tradition in order to keep them alive. And there's going to be times where we have to hide because people are going to persecute us for what we believe. And that fear is always there. That fear still exists today. People are still put through horrendous things because of what they believe.
Right.
And the question is, sometimes, when or if or when will that happen to me? You know, because then you really never know. And since that fear still does exist, I think that's why we see certain groups of people choose to be very particular about the way that they do things and the way that they share things.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that. And you do see a lot of people throughout time, you mentioned a good word, conversation and communication. You've seen a lot of people throughout time that will weave certain messages into their art, be it music or visual art or even sculpture, that are the poignant things they want to say that would otherwise cause them some persecution, some discomfort socially, whatever. So it's important, and I agree that it's not only important for art to be something that we can have a way to weave in some things that we can't necessarily say, but my question to you is, how important do you think art is in helping spark the conversations that consist of what those things are trying to say? How important do you find art to keep us aware of one another's communications?
Extremely important, because I think the more that you do art, the more you digest art, and the more you understand art, the more you're able to pick up on the subtle messages that are placed in art. Because art, as human as it is also beyond humanity. Because sometimes you have the intention to put certain things into a piece, no matter what it is, and people pick up on them. And then sometimes you have someone talk to you about a piece that you've made that they've realized the thing that you had no idea was even in there. Mm. And I think that goes to, you know, what I believe to be us having a collective spirit as humanity that is beyond simply our physical, you know, egotistical existence. Is this where we live on this linear scale of this is how it was, this is how it is now, and it might be like this in the future. But there is this collective being of permanence that exists within, you know, the here and now, that can influence our creativity, that puts timeless messages into pieces of art that can be understood, you know, cross-culturally and kind of beyond time. Because I think there's things we can look to that are super old that people still create with now. There's still concepts that people are working with that have been around for thousands of years, and they will probably never go away because of the permanent influence that does exist on our humanity from soul and spirituality.
Right. Well, that brings up a question I like to ask a lot of people, regardless of what their creative discipline is. Where do you find creativity coming from?
Yeah, that's a crazy question, because in some sense, I think creativity comes from God, in a sense. You know, I don't tie myself to a particular version of God. I just like to use God as the word. Because I believe creativity is this unfolding energy that's always present. Mm-hmm. Creativity is not done. Creativity didn't happen. Creativity is this continuous moment unfolding here and now. So I think it's part of the substance of existence. Creativity is one of the like components of our reality that's continuously unfolding and continuously happening. And I don't think, and I think we can feel our way into it. And as we feel our way into it, we become part of it, or we mirror it, or we, you know, for better, for lack of a better word, translate it, you know, by making things.
What do you do? Creativity is one of those things, and I agree a lot with what you just said personally on a side note, but it's one of those things that some people have to, they try to make themselves do. I'm going to sit down and paint. I'm going to sit down and write a song. When you go to do the creative process or allow creativity to come through you, what do you find are the best practices for you? How do you let it happen?
Feeling, emotion.
Can you just sit down and paint, or are you one of the, or do you prefer to wait for when you're feeling it, for want of a better way of putting it?
I can always sit down and make something, but I cannot always sit down and make something exactly the way I want it to be made. Sometimes I can for commission, I can make it happen.
Right.
But it's not the same as taking a moment, because sometimes there's those moments of inspiration where it's like, oh, wow, I really need to create on this idea. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling very inspired. And there's also moments where I'm not necessarily feeling inspired, but I want to make something. So I sit down and I just really like kind of meditate on how I'm feeling. And through that feeling, because like also feelings to me aren't just something that like that comes from within. It's not just, oh, like am I happy, mad, or sad, or blah, blah, blah. It's literally like realizing that your body is an internal and an external receiver that experiences the environment and the vibes, the vibrations around it that creates this emotion. And as you're feeling this emotion, it's like, where is this coming from? What is this making me think? What's an image that comes to mind through the way I'm feeling right now? And then kind of creating with that and letting it take you.
Yeah, amen to that. How do you think we become better receivers?
Man.
Or what's the trick to tuning? What do you find the trick to tune? Because I feel a lot that same way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like if I always liken it to tuning a radio dial for people to remember doing that, mm-hmm. you know, you'd be static, 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 static. Then all of a sudden, hey, there's a song, mm-hmm. you know, and as long as you can have your antenna up and tune slow enough, you can find the thing. Mm-hmm. So how does that work for you? How do you find that working for you? Or what do you think helps people be better receivers?
I think everything from treating your body and your mind well physically, whether that's, you know, any form of exercise, you know, making sure that you're eating well, that you're hydrated, you know, to the very, you know, gross material, like physical things that you need to do.
Right.
And then also treating yourself well mentally. Because, and I think, I mean, they're both hard in their own sense.
Exactly.
But I think we were talking about it earlier, having that ability to allow yourself the space to be, because I think a lot of people, it's hard for them to even sit still. It's hard for them to even be alone and be with themselves, you know, like sit with their demons per se, because sometimes that's terrifying.
Right.
Sometimes it's the worst thing to be with yourself because of how you don't realize how disrupted your mental plane is.
Right.
And, you know, clearing that up is different for everyone. But I think finding a way to make yourself realize that your mind truly is under your control. It truly is. And yes, there are outside influences that make you think a certain way, but you are still creating those things. And if they seem like it's not you, I think it's just a disconnect with the subconscious part of yourself that kind of is like on this, like this part of you that's like, it's automatic.
Right.
It's just, it's always going and it's always running. And I think that acceptance of, I have this part of myself that is being created by me, but is still not under my control.
Yeah.
But that's okay because we all have that and we all experience that. And some people might experience it beautifully. Some people, it might be straight up terrifying, but there is no right or wrong to that.
Right.
It's just, you should allow yourself the ability to tap into and experience that and get through it, whether you need to be strong or whether you need to be happy or whether you need to feel sad about what you're experiencing, that's fine. That's okay. Because that's a part of you that is kind of begging for a sense of awareness. It's like, hey, like, don't ignore me. I'm here. And I'm being created by you, even if it's not this normal way of thinking and creating that you're, like, actively in.
Right.
You know? It still needs to be, it still needs to be experienced. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that you really have to kind of have the self-discipline to face and go through. So do you find art in your life or in the people who experience your art to be a double-edged coin, or so to speak, that makes it so, you know, you can use your creative process to help you discipline that part of your existence that we all have? And then when someone experiences your art or art invariably, they can use the inspiration of that art to then try to help them discipline that part of themselves. Do you find that to be like a recycle symbol, for want of a better way of putting it?
No, definitely, because I think if, especially if someone sees you creating art, that's why I've really gotten into live painting.
Right, gotcha.
Because like a lot of times, like, I don't know, if you've seen a doodle grid, you know, when people do doodle grids.
Like on murals and stuff,
yeah,
you're talking?
Yeah, it's just a bunch of random, yeah. It's like a bunch of random crap on the wall almost. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people that don't, because a lot of people that aren't familiar with art think, wow, these people are so special. They can just make these things out of nothing.
Right.
You know.
It is a magic trick.
You know, and it just happens. And if you start a doodle grid with someone that's not aware of that, they go, what are you doing? Like what even is that? And you tell them, I'm like, this is for reference. This is so I know where I am.
Right.
This is so I don't get lost, because what I'm doing isn't easy. You know what I mean? What I'm doing needs structure. What I'm doing needs guidance. It's not simply flowing magically out of my hand and coming onto the canvas because I'm different.
Willing it so.
Yeah, or I'm super talented, or I have these superpowers. It's like, no, like, there's as much effort into setting up the structure for my creation as there is into actually, like, making it.
Mm. Crucial.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So when do you start branching out into the bigger mediums and things that make you start to get into, now I need a doodle grid, now I'm changing up. When do you start getting into spraying and that being more of your thing?
I had a desire to create big, because my pieces started off like as these very intricate and like small detailed things. And I was like, man, I'd love to just put this on a wall, you know? And it's like, I like to say, like, to myself, like, I like to talk to my art. You know what I mean? I like to see my art as a being that I have a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that relationship to be too selfish and possessive on my end.
Ah.
You know what I mean? It was like, if my art was a person, how would I want to treat a person? And, you know, you don't want to lock a person away and keep them hidden. You don't want to limit a person. You want them to experience all the versions of themselves that they can and all their beauty. And you want people to be able to see them. So that's why I kind of like started spray painting and doing stuff big, because I want to put art in public spaces, because it's like my art is begging me to be seen.
Mm.
So I want my art to be places where people can also experience it and see it. So my art can be appreciated for another form of itself.
So is that your main focus right now, to do the bigger pieces?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It's definitely my main focus right now. Like, I'm still drawing. I'm still tattooing, doing other things, but right now it's, how can I paint murals? How can I get this style that I've wiggled my way into publicly presentable, so people can experience a very similar yet new form of artistic representation?
Yeah, well, it seems like you've definitely got a knack for the wiggle. So, so let's rewind just a tad bit. How do you start getting into the tattooing? Was this just the thought in your head that you needed to be able to diversify, like you were saying before, and make sure you weren't pigeonholing yourself?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, just it's also I think, such a cool medium. And I, like, you know, people started asking me for tattoos before I even learned how to do it. And I was like, wow, that feeling. I felt so grateful that someone wanted a piece of my art on them. And then, like you said, it's like diversifying onto another canvas. And I remember, like, the first tattoo I did was on myself. And I do these characters on my art to give it representation of meaning, but they're characters that have no meaning, because there's a similar practice in Buddhist art where they make symbols on mandalas, whether they're like the physical drawings or the sand mandalas, that have no meaning, but they still have the representation of meaning, because it's the act of simultaneously creating something with meaning but stripping that meaning away from it, because accepting that awareness of its impermanence, which I just found beautiful. And I was creating these pieces of these like funky faces and these suns and these beings and these very abstract animals. And I was like, they need a language. There's a world. They need symbols. They need communication. So I created that. And then it's something I tattooed on myself, because I was like, not only is like the creation of these characters something that I find super important,
right,
but getting them and then marking them on myself is almost a way of saying, okay, no, I'm committing to this. This is something I truly believe in, instead of, yeah, I make it, but, you know, I'm not going to embody it.
Right.
Because I was starting to realize that. I was starting to realize, like, I need this on myself. I need to do this, because this is an important part of what I'm trying to communicate with myself and to other people. About this realization of self and about this putting this commitment and this faith into the self and really embodying it. And that can happen in different ways. And for me, it was kind of tattooing. It was like, no, like, I need to mark myself with this, because it is something that I really want to embody, and it's something that I truly believe is important.
Yeah, that resonates a lot. Do you feel like having that literal embodiment at this point helps you maintain the attachment to your arts and creations that kind of stave off the part that makes every artist, or I shouldn't say every artist, but lots of artists uncomfortable, which is the commoditization of what you've done?
Yeah, most definitely, because, you know, I'm not going to sell this.
Yeah.
So it's
well, it means more to you than just a product.
Exactly. It means more to me than a product, because it becomes part of my physical body, it becomes part of my skin. And, you know, after I did it, I looked in the mirror, you know, the whole front of my thigh, and was like, this is me. You know what I mean? I was like, I recognize myself more now than I did before it was there.
And what was that feeling? Relief? Liberation?
It was like it was relieving and it was liberating, but it was more just like a sense of complete knowing. It's like I looked at myself and was like, yeah, this is how it's supposed to be.
Nice.
You know, I was just like, yeah, there's no doubts really. It was just like, this is who I am. So it was kind of, it was those things, but it wasn't super surprising, because it was like, even though it wasn't there before, it was a moment that I knew had always existed and that I had felt that always needed to be. So it was like I stepped into something that already was. I stepped into myself that had already existed almost.
That's an important thing to be conscious of.
For sure.
When you can have those feelings. What do you think? Now this is a little bit deviated topic from being an artist, but we'll go there.
All good.
What do you think the nature of those feelings are that you're stepping into your supposed to, you know, that when people can be in tune enough to have those feelings, what do you think that is?
This is controversial for some people, but it's not controversial for me, because in my experience, I think consciousness and awareness is not subject to our physical body. So I was mentioning earlier how I feel like there's a creative and a collective spirit that's non-physical, that is permanently existing, that is always inspiring us to do things. That's where I feel like this nature of knowing who you are comes from, because I think who you are already, outside of our third dimensional existence, who you are already exists as a permanent concept in time. And I think that concept is whether it's completely all of it or it's a small piece of it that exists within our physical selves,
right,
is very real. And it's very aware of who you are, and it's very aware of your purpose, I guess you could say.
Why do you think people are losing the ability to notice that or reach out and touch that so much?
You know, it's hard to say, because I think some things that might limit someone's awareness might influence the awareness on other people.
Interesting.
But I think, you know, it's strange because there's so much science that goes into saying, how can the soul be real if we can't prove it? But there's also so much science that will kind of prove the possibility of it being real. You know, ultimately, I don't think it's like a particular force or particular evil. More is it's an internal confusion and an internal fear of the exploration of what is actually more than just our physical existence. Because I think it can be looked at in two ways. It can be looked at as I've learned to live a certain way my entire life, and the fact that there's more than that could make me wrong, and that's scary. And then there's also the, okay, everything that I have learned and that I have embodied to live and to survive is not all that there is. And that's a beautiful thing, because the complexity of consciousness and soul and humanity is actually greater than we may ever completely understand, because we won't ever understand everything. Like I was saying earlier, creation isn't over. It's continuously unfolding and it's continuously happening. So that really means, you know, there will never be a moment where everything is all figured out. And that's totally okay, because I think that's kind of a loop that, you know, right, we all get into sometimes. It's like, okay, I've got it all figured out. I'm all good now. I'm comfortable. I can sit here and be still and fight against the flow that's continuously unfolding and continuously, you know, rejuvenating things, creating things, destroying things. And I think that's probably what holds us back. And I think a lot of that comes from within, you know.
And you feel like that's inherently what we are supposed to be helping each other with, and our art is helping each other with?
I think so. I think so, because, you know, we have the ability as humans to think about evolution.
Right.
And we have the ability to think, how are we going to move forward, and how are we going to, I guess you say, get better?
Yeah.
You know, some people argue get better is still like survive as much as we can, you know?
Yeah, true.
Exploit as much as we can.
Yeah, that's a relative term, I guess.
Definitely, but I think also, you know, moving forward with that like concept of how are we going to get better is becoming aware.
Right.
And inspiring other people to be more aware of themselves and communicating the complexity of existence, and that there might be stuff beyond just what's right here and what's right in front of us, and that we don't necessarily have to completely dismantle our like three-dimensional sense of self to get there, and to be like, okay, like, well, it doesn't matter that we're human then, like nothing matters.
Yeah, right. And maybe that's the trick. Maybe that's the trick.
You don't have to embody nihilism to be existential.
Right.
And it can be both. You know what I mean? There's so many versions of yourself you can explore. Some people have the ability to really, I guess, get their mind out there and think of insane concepts, you know, and get to very, well, I would say crazy dimensions of thought and crazy dimensions of feeling and awareness, and still, you know, still be human.
Right.
And still be real, still just exist as we are now. And I think in realizing there is no better or worse form of existing, rather that all these ways of thinking and all these ways of existing are valid, and they all have a space.
Is that almost the sentiment that the limitless nature of what we don't fully understand and the limited nature of what we're touching and feeling and try to understand are not mutually exclusive?
I don't think so. They can't be. They're not mutually exclusive. Because I guess, you know, it's a tough question, but because it's like, if they were mutually exclusive, it's like, where's the dividend? Like, where's the wall?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. That's exactly why I asked that, because then that begs the question, where's the what's the line?
Exactly. And how are you going to say a line is there when
it could never be proved?
You can't ever be proved. Exactly. So I think like that like simultaneous like idea of like this can't be proved, but this can be felt and thought of, is maybe the dividend, but it's still not like it still doesn't divide it.
Right.
You know?
Yep. Well, then that's the real that's the real operative part of that, the limitless nature that we don't understand and the limited nature of what we do understand can coexist and be helpful to one another.
Exactly. And that's really why I advocate for psychedelic medicine. And I think it's something because it gives people the ability to experience things beyond themselves without having to become an extremely disciplined individual and abandon their lives to, I don't know, go meditate in the mountains or
right.
whatever you think someone needs to do, or be like a master yogi, whatever someone you think, like when you think of someone that's extremely spiritual, you'd be like, oh, I have to be like that. Well, not everyone can be a certain way. And I think when we look at these medicines that cultures have used for thousands of years, anyone can take them and anyone can experience just different forms of consciousness and thought simply by receiving something that the earth naturally presents to us and that shares with us and gives to us.
Because that connected nature can't be ignored at that point.
Definitely.
At least from what I understand.
No, yeah, most definitely.
So when you get to the point where all this is coming more clear to you, and it's not a matter of betterment so much as it is incremental evolution and the continued watering of the seed of awareness. How does your art life start to flourish with that? Is this, you know, you're just tattooing, you know, I kind of want to play rewind just a little bit. You get to the point where you're tattooing, your art is branching out a little bit. What starts to be some of the dominoes that fall for you from there? Because you didn't set out to be a tattoo artist.
Right.
So how do these dominoes kind of start falling for you?
I mean, they kind of start falling because it's the realization of the unity between them. The more I do, the more I realize it's connected to everything. And that the possibility and potential is there for whatever I desire, also whatever I feel needs to be done. So, you know, something like this, where we can have these conversations where my drawings and my paintings and my tattoos are no more different than poetry I might write or conversations I might have like this for the public eye or for the private, you know, understanding, because innately through all these different actions, I'm trying to get at the same idea, and the same message.
So it's a matter of, well, I guess let me ask you this. Do you subconsciously or otherwise embody a philosophy where you don't say no to things, or you're reluctant to say no to things?
I mean, definitely. There's certain things I'll say no to because there's sometimes I know it's either not the time or it's not for me. But in terms of opportunity,
yeah,
I try to take them if I can. If I can afford it, if I'm in a good place mentally, If I'm in a good place physically, yes. I don't like to pass up on those opportunities. And, you know, most of the time, if not all times, if it's something I haven't done, I'm, like I said, I'm terrified. I'm scared. But, you know, I try as best I can to turn that fear into curiosity.
Mm.
Because, you know, it's like when you're about to go on a roller coaster, your stomach hurts, and you're like, oh no, like this is about to be horrible. But at the same time, it's a completely new experience, and it might be terrifying to get on there, but once you get there and once you do it, it could be one of the funnest things that you've ever done. So that's why I try not to say no to opportunities if I'm able to do them without taking too much negative consequences onto myself.
Right. So how important do you find it, or how much of your time would you say you spend outside of your comfort zone?
A pretty balanced amount of time. There's times where I spend a lot of time outside of my comfort zone, and there's sometimes where, you know, I'll snuggle up in the comfort zone and I'll stay comfortable for a while. And sometimes it'll take a little bit of shaking to be like, hey, you know what I mean? You can't always be comfortable. You need to get out of that. You need to go experience something new.
Yeah, what are those moments like?
You know, they're weird, and they're enlightening, because sometimes, you know, I find myself fighting against them.
Right.
And then it really takes a second to be like, why am I fighting? Like, what am I afraid of? Do I not want to accept that I was either wrong, or that I was scared, or that I was confused? Like, and going like no, that's fine. Like, I was wrong. And that I need to feel wrong.
Yeah, those are tall mountains.
Yeah, that doesn't make me like a bad person. That makes me human.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way, though.
No, for sure. For sure. And I think, because we all make mistakes, we all have misunderstandings. And I think it's important, you know, for myself to realize when I'm being closed-minded.
Mm.
Or I just need to be like, listen, I don't understand what's going on. Or I don't agree with what's going on, but let's talk about it. This is making me feel weird, but let's talk about it. And sometimes it changes my mind and I'm like, okay, this is great. I love this. Or I can be like, okay, this is not necessarily for me, but I understand why it's for you. And I love that you have shown me why it's good, even if I don't agree with it or I don't want to embody it, but that's okay, because difference is important. And that there's unity within difference, because, like, you know, everyone can't be the same. Everyone can't think the same. Everyone can't feel the same. And the idea that we can be united through division, that we can have different groups of people, that we can have different beliefs and different ways of doing things coexist, instead of this tribal mentality.
Yes.
I live a certain way and I do this certain thing, and that's how it needs to be. And anything against that is either in la-la land, or it's wrong, or it threatens my existence. Because I think changing that mentality is important, for sure.
Right. Agreed. And I feel like you can say that so definitively because the change you've experienced personally. Mm-hmm. So how does that affect your creative process when those sorts of awakenings, for no other way of putting it, or awarenesses come to you, and you kind of can take another little piece of freedom, you can take another little piece of self-comfortability, even in the face of getting outside of your comfort zone, of being terrified, of being uncertain, you know, how have those realizations affected your creative process when you're literally doing it?
It's made it flow better, because I think when I can take any negative impositions I've put on myself because of a misunderstanding or a disagreeance, and I can create with them, that's where it becomes magical. That's where I think you literally turn dirt into gold, because you might think that what you're feeling and what you're imagining or whatever is wrong or is bad, but then you realize you can take that energy and change it into something beautiful, change it into art, change it into music, change it into a conversation, change it into a rejuvenated relationship, then you've realized how to harness magic as a human being.
Yes. So it's that feeling of being able to harness it. So let me ask you this. This isn't something that you get good at instantly. This isn't something that you identify with instantly. Where are you at when you start identifying this in your creative process? And I can only assume, but I'm wondering if one helps the other as you get to this point.
Right. You know, for me, they've always been in an upward dance, if that makes sense. There's,
yeah.
There's times when one is the leader, when one is more dominant, and they tend to kind of trade positions, because there's sometimes I'm just, you know, where the art and the creativity is leading it, and there's sometimes where the emotion and the experience is completely leading it, and innately they're very similar, but when the art is leading it, I'm in a lot more control.
Right.
Versus when the emotion is leading it, and the lessons, I guess you could say, are leading it, it's more like I'm listening to something that's making me create a certain way. And I think both forms are inseparable, because I don't think I could have one without the other, because if I only created when I wanted to, I wouldn't really like it. You know what yeah, I mean?
Right.
And if I only created when I had
the angst or whatever.
Yeah, when I only created when I had angst or inspiration or a lot of intense emotion, I think it would take a lot out of me. You know what I mean? And I think it would be hard for me to ground myself in reality and in relationships if everything was based off that. So like I said, they're kind of in an upward dance. They support each other. One supports the other at certain times. One beats the other up. Beats the other up at certain times. But the more they work together, the more they understand each other.
That's really valuable insight, and I think really, really useful and universally applicable when you can feel that. So now you're here. Now you're at this point. What is the next big thing on the horizon for you?
Right now, I mean, like I said, I want to get more mural work done. I have a lot of ideas about stuff I want to do personally. There's this like idea I have right now that I might do or I might not do called the Free Mural Project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what it would start off with me going to spaces that aren't necessarily, I guess you could say, vibrant, that don't have public art.
Mm-hmm.
And having companies or people with private properties basically just cover materials. And then I would go paint there. And then hopefully, if I can get like funding for this, I would take under-recognized artists with me to do the exact same thing. Like, look, I have this group of very talented people that need support. They need to build resumes, or they need to understand what it's like to do such a project, and that they have the ability, that they're extremely talented. They just don't know the right people, because there's so many great artists that are just going unseen because they just don't know the right people.
Right.
And it's getting them projects to where they can be seen, and to where they can take their art and do the same thing that I want to do with mine, and have it appreciated, and have it be seen by other people, and have it be experienced by other people.
This is the centrifuge to your whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well then let's get you out of here on something fun that plays into that. If you could have a dream canvas, building, location to be your grand beacon, what would it be?
You know, honestly, I would want to be given a genie lift, or like a, I don't want to call it like a pulley system, and I would want the side of a building. You know what I mean? Preferably, you know, it doesn't have to be windowless, but as big as possible, as much spray paint as I can get. And, you know,
we'll get Montana Cans on the phone.
Exactly. Right. If it could be 100 feet tall, and I was given the time and the permission to do it, I would love to do it.
And would you have a dream city to put it in anywhere in the world?
Man, really?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
No?
It doesn't matter. As long as it can be seen, as long as it's a city, preferably somewhere that might not already have a large amount of art.
Right.
But there is no specific area that I would want to have done in. It can be a different country. It could be right down the street. It could be another state. No problem. Like,
Because it's about art doing its thing
it's
regardless.
It's about art doing its thing regardless. And sometimes the art presents an opportunity that's not controlled by you, and you just gotta take it. You just gotta take it.
Amen to that, brother. Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming down, and I really appreciate you sharing. And we're definitely going to have to do this again because we've got more layers to this onion.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I'd love to come back. Yeah.
Dude, you're more, always welcome. You're K the fam now, man. So
thank you.
I appreciate it so much, brother. Thank you so much, man.
Awesome.